From Studio Live in beautiful Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Howlett. Thanks again for joining us as we explore the food culture of the Comox Valley and beyond. Hey, John.
Hey, Darren. It's great to be back in the studio again, and I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in once again to find out about some of the great stuff that's happening around this community.
Yeah.
And just in food in general, you know, if people with questions about food and what's going on. So how you been doing, Darren?
I'm good. I'm just getting over a cold. I think Dine Around really did a number on me.
Are you feeling it from Dine Around?
Been spread pretty thin these last few weeks. I know you have been too.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's been a successful Dine Around for sure. Definitely a lot of people coming out, a lot of people asking, a lot of people talking about it, so...
Yeah,
that's always a positive thing, and comparing different restaurants and different hearing information about what they had at this one place and some of the neat treats they got that they might not normally experience. So
I found just talking to some of the customers on their way out, or guests, or however you would like to refer to them as, they were asking just in the last few days of it, they were surprised because the door, you know, the lineups at the door and everything, and they're just like, is this normal? It's like, yes, this is normal. But they said, how many people are eating, like how many people that are in here are eating like from the Dine Around menu? And I was like, that's a pretty good question, and not something that normal people, like the average person, doesn't generally ask. But I said, you know, in the first few weeks or the first like 10 days, it's maybe 20%. But then by the end, it's like every single person has caught on to the whole that you're getting that great like three courses of all local food and or as best local as possible. And
yeah, definitely. And the season's a bit of a tough time, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, those last few days, it seemed like every single person was ordering straight Dine Around menu. It was fantastic.
Well, talking about local food, I think that can segue into what we're here to talk about tonight, because we want to get into learning a little bit about urban agriculture.
Sure. Yeah. So joining us tonight, we have a couple of people from Lush Valley. We have program coordinator, my apologies, Andrea.
Okay.
Andrea Capelli. And we have board member James McCarricker, who is not the vice president. He is a board member. There was some confusion there a few minutes ago. How are you?
Really good, thanks.
How are you? Well.
Good. And it's good to welcome you back, James, because you have your other hat over at one of our sponsors and favorite places, the Butcher's Block, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no, it's great. So how can you describe to us urban agriculture? What does it entail?
It's a huge question. It entails so much. Basically, people have become really removed from their food sources. And over time, families have moved from rural environments into urban environments. And there's been a corporatization of food. We buy our food in a grocery store. We've really lost touch with the roots of what our food is. So urban agriculture is doing a backyard garden. It's promoting local food within your community. It's focusing on the urban aspect of growing and producing your own food.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's Lush Valley's, I mean, I hear your name used a lot. Maybe it's just the circles that I'm in, but like, what exactly is Lush Valley's position? Like, what do you do to build on that or promote that?
Yeah, so Lush Valley is a not-for-profit focusing on food security in the Comox Valley. And a big part of food security is urban agriculture, so putting people back into touch with their food in an urban environment. So a while back, we received some funding to partner with the city of Courtney to do a research project to see if citizens of Courtney were interested in urban agriculture practices like raising backyard chickens, so having hens, doing urban beekeeping, so having beehives in your backyard, and also doing yard gate sales, so having the ability to sell your excess produce that you've been growing in your garden and have a little farm gate stand on your front lawn of your property.
Right.
And this hasn't been touched on in that complete package. I know back in 2011, there was a really quick referendum that happened about backyard chickens. But we want to ask about more than that. So the urban agriculture package, I guess.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there was a questionnaire that was up online up until today?
It's actually online until March 15th. Wednesday. So
So a couple days left. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. John and I went through it too, just answering as we were, because we wanted to participate as well. But yeah, it seemed to really sort of focus on a couple of those key points. And I thought it was great. Like we actually got really sort of excited about it. Like, yes, yes, we want to see that. Yes, we hope that happens.
There was a little bit of debating about it too. I'm like, do you need a license? Should you have a license? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
But so right now, you're not allowed to have chickens in the city of Courtney?
No, within city of Courtney limits, unless you're in an agriculturally zoned land, you're not allowed to have these things. So we know some people do, but the issue with that is if you have maybe a nasty neighbor who turns you in, then you can't have your chickens or bees or be selling from your property. Right. So we want to make sure that it is legal for everyone. Because it's important. It's, you know, a way to augment your income. You're getting the fresh eggs and honey from your backyard. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And so is this just the first step then? Is this questionnaire the beginning of this process?
Totally. So it is, anytime you're working with policy and local government or municipalities, you kind of have to go through all of these steps.
Right.
And Cumberland's recently done this with their OCP. So they've allowed for backyard chickens and bees and all of that. So the first step is really to educate the public, because a lot of people have misconceptions about urban agriculture, or they have misconceptions about, you know, raising backyard chickens. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it's going to be so dirty and loud and there's going to be a rooster crowing. But they don't realize, first of all, roosters wouldn't be allowed because,
right.
Yeah, no one wants that 5 a.m. wake up call. Yeah. But just, yeah, so you want to educate people to get rid of the misconceptions first.
Right, yeah.
And then what we're doing right now is collecting all of that feedback from our online survey and through some community forums that we've been doing. We've been engaging with as many folks from the community as possible to find out if they're for or against or somewhere in between. Because who knows? People might be like, no, we don't want this at all. So then you collect that. And then what we're going to be doing is writing a report with some city staff. And we'll be presenting that to City of Courtney Council, not as an addendum to change a bylaw, but simply as that initial step that we have collected feedback from the community. Right. And this is something people want.
Right. And then from there, it gets... Yeah, it'll start to go through legal channels.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the survey's not over, but do you have any feeling of how it's going at this moment, or is it a...
Yeah, so far people have been really supportive. Mm-hmm. And again, it's, you know, it's one of those things that we don't know if it's just because it's the people that are in our circle that are already foodies or activists or interested or have farms or that sort of thing. But so far it's been positive.
Yeah.
We're expecting some of the, you know, the negativity to come out right before we go to present. But that's just the way it goes with anything that you do. But so far, really positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll add that we have, our goal was to beat the amount of responses that they got from the food truck survey the City of Courtney recently did.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just over 1,000. And we're just over 400 right now. So, hopefully we'll get some more people.
Get some more.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was two for myself and Darren. So, awesome. and we're definitely passing it around and getting people. To me, I kind of think it's funny that it's banned. You know, I think growing up in this community and knowing where people come from this community, we're very connected to our farm and the land, that there shouldn't be an issue with this in the first place, that we need to actually find out if this is what we want. Yeah. Mind you, I look at like your place, James, and I know James. I don't want to talk all about my property, but it's kind of amazing.
That's why I voted all no's. James is actually my neighbor. I didn't want to see a farm stand. No, I'm kidding. I voted all yeses, and I was like, that'd be great if if you had all your excess and all the little extras and you had them for sale right there around the, send the kids for eggs. Hey, go over to James' house and buy some eggs.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
The egg man.
Yeah. And what's your take on everything? I mean, again, we didn't really cover it when we sat down to talk, but there was talk of VP, there was talk of board member, and then you were saying that you're more the mascot. Like, what's your role here?
Well, I'm officially the vice president of the board of directors.
Oh, okay.
But I would think more informally a mascot or poster child of sorts.
Right.
Yeah. I go to the board of directors meetings and I listen to all the issues, mm-hmm. And mostly just to try to get in touch to, you know, what are the issues that we're working towards, and what are we striving towards, and what are the greater visions. But I think still my passion is just, you know, my own backyard and like my own immediate community and
yeah.
what can I be doing there? I guess I'm more of I like to have my hands in the soil kind of guy.
Yeah. Know? Right.
So, yeah, what can I say about that? You know, our yard is, I would love to have a yard, you know, the ability to have the yard gate sales. I think at this point, we do produce, you know, an excess of a number of things. And given that we can't just go put up the sign, and I do think that there are people in our neighborhood that would complain. Probably my next door neighbor, actually.
Oh, you think?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how you know her, but
I don't. I was going to say
not listening.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was going to say the exact opposite. Yeah. That when you were taking it that way, I was going to say that I can think of like five or six people just in our immediate like two blocks that would definitely support it. That would like.
Yeah, I do think that the overwhelming majority would be absolutely in support of specifically the yard gate sales.
Yeah.
I think when you get into the bees and the chickens, there's just so much unknown, right?
Right.
There's a lot of people just don't know anything really about it. So, you know, we naturally fear the unknown, which is ultimately, I think, what we're trying to address with the survey and just getting more public input. What are the fears that people have? You know, if they have these fears that are completely unfounded, then let's... Let's address those and let's raise awareness and let's move forward from there. But
wow.
I don't think that we would perhaps consider having a couple of hens. Mm-hmm. It's not like a burning desire. Oh man, I wish we could have hens right now, given that we have such a small backyard and we're butted up right against our next door neighbor there. So it's, there are issues.
And no, but
there.
I mean, you guys, you in particular, like you've definitely developed your property to be all like food producing.
There's
barely an inch left over.
There's not much space left now. My girlfriend Caitlin, obviously she's super involved with it as well. Anytime you go past the yard, you're like, wow, that's like, those are really nice straight lines, or like, look at the curve in there. That is not me. Yeah. If you look at the soil and you go, oh, that's nice and rich, that's my compost. But
right.
So yeah, we have complementary skill sets. She's really interested in the beekeeping aspect, and we have planted a number of fruit trees, so they're quite young. We haven't been on that property very long at all, but talking to beekeepers when we were conducting this survey, we were manning a table at CD Saturday and talking to beekeepers that are saying that when they brought bees onto certain properties, you know, the pollination of fruits, like the harvest, you know, doubled. You just come with these extraordinary numbers.
Wow.
It's interesting to imagine what, you know, if I would absolutely love to see just more fruit trees in urban environments. I think that's just a no-brainer. Why would you not just take the time to plant an apple tree if you've got a bit of lawn? Like, why would you not do that? And then continue that conversation. Well, now let's bring in the bees and everything that revolves around that, I guess.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, no, I was just going to say, because beekeeping or bees are a bit of a concern for a lot of people, sort of in a global situation that we're seeing declines in our bee populations. And a lot of people forget how important that is for the growth of everything. And that's how everything gets pollinated. And just this one little animal is responsible for so much that I think we've almost forgotten about. So
there isn't some great government super plan to like replenish the bee population. That's sort of up to everybody else to sort of take it in their own hands and say, hey, like, let's help this out. Let's help this situation out.
Yeah.
What else falls under the purview of the urban agriculture? Like, what, I mean, this isn't the only aspect. This is just what's going on at the moment, right?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, even at Lush, we do some other urban agriculture initiatives. We have a community garden downtown Courtney on 6th Street and Harmston Ave. And that's a place where anyone from the community can apply to have a garden plot garden there for no cost. So we get a lot of our plants and seeds donated to us. So that's a way to improve food security for folks who maybe come from a lower income background or live in apartment buildings and don't have, you know, even a patio to put a, you know, tomato plants on. So we do that. And we also work a lot with schools and promoting their school gardens.
Right.
And we'd really like to see an increase of that, of community gardens and school gardens in the Comox Valley.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys know we have this amazing growing climate. I came here from Toronto and I'm still like, my mind is blown every day. Like, what?
Yeah.
You can do this year round? So we want to take advantage of that. And, you know, urban agriculture, I think one of the misconceptions about it is that it's people who promote urban agriculture look at it as the solution. And it's not the solution. It's part of the solution. Of course, we need our rural farms. We need all of that. But it is that way to, especially with the community gardens, to bring people together, and that social cohesion sort of happens in a community garden. And people really get in touch with their food, so they understand, you know, what it takes to grow something, and they have a newfound appreciation for the food that's grown locally, and they might be more apt to promote a local farmer or go to the farmer's market than, you know, go to one of the big box stores or whatever when they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then there's, I mean, if you just Google urban agriculture, I'm a total urban agriculture nerd, so you're really excited about it, but, you know, there's vertical farming and like all of these amazing concepts happening all over the world, rooftop gardens, and I mean, you name it, there's just so many cool inventions coming out.
I actually saw something today and it was just completely by coincidence. Like, it had nothing to do with researching for this, but it was promoting, I'm not going to say whom, not that there's any reason not to, but a major retailer is starting to carry an in-home hydroponic system for your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people do this before, and I've seen people that have set this up before, but this is just literally like a buy and go kit. Like, it's ready to go, and it's about the size of a very small refrigerator, and it's a stand up. And they were talking about just the yield you can get off that. And all you're doing is really is hooking up to your existing water and your existing power, like not even any fixtures, plumbing, whatever, just straight tap, hook up, and go. I think it's pretty amazing. Like, that, just the fact that a major retailer has enough faith in seeing that this is something that consumers want now. This is a direction that consumers are going into.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's amazing.
People are coming back to the notion of, there's this nostalgia, I think, and a longing to get back to the land. I think a lot of people are curious. And I feel, I mean, I'm 35. There's this generational gap where we may have not grown up with the knowledge of working in a garden or on a farm, but our grandparents certainly did, and, you know, our ancestors and so on and so on. And I find a lot of folks in my age group, they want to learn how to garden. They want to learn how to be more self-sufficient or learn how to can and, you know, preserve their harvest and just, you know, homestead a little bit. I mean, not tons, but just something to... Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's definitely something I know. As growing up as a kid in this town, it was, everyone had their little garden in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, that was just how you did it. And it just sort of supplemented everything. And then, of course, you had the end of the season and everyone trying to give away zucchinis.
Yeah.
You know, the battle and all those fun things. But yeah, so I kind of feel like this, it's a great opportunity. And I sort of think back to how, when I was a kid, that we were all told to plant a tree to make the world a better place. And I'm like, well, wouldn't it be better to plant a garden and have something we can get back to each other from it? So I like that whole opportunity to sort of work together. And that's what I think part of this urban agricultural thing is, bringing people together is a great opportunity, right?
Totally.
It really does go so much beyond just producing food, you know, like, it really is. I think a lot of the value that we've gained from our yardscape is just, now we can interact, you know, as opposed to having a lawn. What are you going to do with your lawn?
Right.
It's like, now we actually have a nice physical space right outside our house that is just nice to sit down and like enjoy that or interact with that.
Right.
The interaction with, you know, our neighbors, you guys and others, that just, we know so many people in our neighborhood just because we have a garden in our front yard, and they walk by and they ask questions about what's going on there, well, and then spark those conversations.
Yeah, but you don't have just a garden. You have like the pinnacle garden of the community. But yes, I absolutely agree with you there.
Yeah. Well, there's another point I would bring up, and I actually liked it, and it comes back to our weather lately, which has been a little cold, wet, and definitely a lot of snow, which is a bit strange for us around here. Or has been missing for a few years, and so yeah. Not a bad thing, but it's kind of neat because I never got to see my neighbors as much as lately as when they're outside shoveling their front yard, clearing off the driveway, doing the walks and stuff, and so you'd have those little interactions with them. But I almost find that having that garden in the front yard brings that along too, because I see you every so often when I'm off to work or on my way back or whatever, and you're out there shoveling away, and I'm like, how's it going? Yeah. You know, and
just the day before yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Manure.
I'm like, yeah. See you on the podcast on Monday. So. But I mean, that interaction is great. That gets people out of their house and into their front yard, because kind of the front yard has become that little oasis that no one touches. And it's just, other than when you're out there cutting your grass with the lawnmower,
yeah,
really, what is it good for? So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks for, I think that sort of covers everything that we wanted to talk about, isn't it?
Well, we definitely need to, for people who are really interested in this, where can they learn more about this and go from there?
Definitely. Well, right now our website's under construction, unfortunately. But the best place to go for up-to-date news on everything that we're doing with this project and everything we do at Lush Valley is through our Facebook page. We're pretty active on social media, so Facebook and Twitter and even Instagram going for it all.
Sure.
And then we have... I welcome people to contact us. So send us an email, give us a phone call if you want to meet and chat with one of us. Like, we're so open to hearing back from the community on what it is that they're interested in when it comes to food security, you know, what their issues are, what they'd like to see happen in our community. That's what we're here for, is to push those things forward. So,
okay, great. Mm-hmm. And they can find that like Lush Valley on Facebook?
Yeah. They can go to lushvalley.org is our website, or on Facebook, I believe we're Lush Valley Food, and same with Twitter.
Okay, great. Thanks.
No problem.
And
excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and thank you. Definitely would love to have you back again if you have any other great things happening at Lush Valley, because I know it's a great organization, and from the tree, the apple picking,
which I
luckily got to hang out with the other day, a couple months ago, I guess now. Yeah. It's such a great organization and doing such wonderful things to get people involved with food again and get in touch with their food again, which I think is a very important thing. So,
yeah. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for all the support from our sponsors, Butcher's Block and Courtney. We also want to thank Atlas Cafe, as always, as well as Studio Live here in Cumberland, where we're recording tonight. Don't want to forget Ivan's Truffles or Kirsten Wood Music. Thank you for all your support. And if you want to get involved or support, find out how you can support us too and have your name added to this list, just contact us through any of these channels that John's going to tell you.
So yeah, we'd love to hear back from you. Don't forget to go on, if you're on iTunes, listening to us on iTunes, don't forget to give us a nice little review. Tell us what you think, or at least just get that out there. It just helps promote the message a little bit. You can check us out on our Facebook site at Edible Valley, or on Twitter at Edible Valley. Definitely we always have our check out the website with the ediblevalley.com. Or we are working slowly on our Edible Valley WordPress site, so we're getting a little bit bigger blogs and a little bit more information about what's going on out there. So we definitely like to thank you all for listening, and hope you tune in next time.
Thanks.